liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Grunge?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Solomon?
Here.
Quorum present?
Thank you.
We have an agenda.
We don't have any comments on non-agenda items. Move on to discussion of international property maintenance code. Scott?
Thank you, Mayor. To resume the discussion from we're looking at submitting the property maintenance code to the city for consideration and adoption. And for the purpose of giving us a tool that we can deal with properties required to get to the point where they require demolition and having a hearing like we just had an hour earlier. This property maintenance code covers a wide variety of things. Some, you know, within our ability to administrate, others are not. More mechanical, plumbing, electrical things kind of outside our current skill set. But having those there does give us the opportunity to force them if we get it with a contract or some other way. So if the need came, that tool is there to adopt. In administering this ordinance, it's probably one of the most critical things is how it's done. I think in the past, a couple of times when this was brought to the city, concerns of how it would be enforced and eventually led to it not being adopted. But I think we already have a pretty good reputation and process for administering and enforcing ordinance on books. We generally work with people, but we do take action when we need to. So with that, I think we can allay those concerns. So I think this tool would give us the ability to address a lot more that needs to be addressed, and kind of getting the small issues before they become the big issues. So I think this house on Thompson that we had this hearing on previously is a perfect example. That house became vacant in 2008 and started off with weed violations, and it started off building a little poor, and some no maintenance and water infiltration, and then it just progressively got worse to the point now that we have to get the order to require it to be demolished or fixed. So I think this tool will help us eliminate that process. Don Gilman, the building official for Alpena, is here, and he's an expert in the field. He can probably address more technical questions about the ordinance specifically, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions he has about the process.
So this is just a workshop to
answer any questions that you have about the ordinance and the process, and then kind of give us direction on how would you like to move forward.
So Scott, if we had this with the house on Thompson, what would have been different about the process, or how would that have made it better for you or better to enforcement?
Well, the exterior, and correct me if I'm wrong, Don, but the exterior is required to be a weather tight. Yeah, and it has OSB on the sides of the building. So there would be a violation. You'd have to fix it. They'd have to make it, weather tight.
It specifically would say weather tight, roof, siding, windows, or a naturally preserved wood. So where now, if you just roll up there and say, well, you built brand new OSB. Well, brand new OSB looks great for a week and a half. But this is all based, goes back to the broken window thing. And I think the point, because I've been to that place, we just had a hearing. 3 years ago, it might not have been a violation. And maybe it was, I don't know for a fact, but it may not have been a violation of your dangerous building ordinance. So not having a property maintenance code, it forces you to wait till they absolutely get terrible and you're getting tons and tons of complaints. So it puts you in a position to react. And don't get me wrong, my city is no different than yours. I got plenty of junk building, you know, we do have proper maintenance code, but it allows us to try to get ahead of it. Some people, strangely enough, don't even notice seven or eight shingles have been blown off their house, and now it's leaking because they live on the first floor, an old lady lives by herself, she doesn't go upstairs anymore, it's leaking, wrecking her house, they actually appreciate it knocking on the door. But that's kind of the tool that allows you to get out and catch the curve a little bit. And a lot of places, the township just north of us started looking at adopting the International Property Maintenance Code, 564 signatures, it was coupled with a bunch of other copywriters. It's always, the fear is always, how is the enforcement going to be handled? You know, you're going to pick on me, because if you have a copy of it, you read through it, you can start picking at your own house, and go, man, they could get me.
I'm worried about
that. That's how it is, I mean, this is what every property's got something wrong with, right?
I'm worried about my torn screen.
But there's only a few who that really get so bad that, you know, you got to do something, but this just allows them to jump out ahead of the curve.
So that's really, you know, a good point you're talking about, the shingles that were loose and that sort of thing. In my case, I picked up a torn screen thing. How do you distinguish between those, which are sort of minor things that, you know, they're really pretty minor, versus the real intent, which is try to prevent a structure that's in bad shape from getting so bad that we then have to revert to the kind of process you just took?
Right. Or if you do, it's for just cause. But the idea is, yeah, get it before gets that bad, because then you got a bunch of people unhappy or living around it. But the thing is, who's going to care about a torn screen? In reality, what neighbor is going to complain if somebody's got a 4-inch tear? Even though, you know, if you read the book, right, it's a violation between April and October, whatever date you insert. Who really cares? The only one that's probably going to care is the owner of the property. So if they fix it, they fix it. It's not an eyesore to the neighbor. Most of the neighbors would never even know anyway. So that's what I mean about that. The fear is, how is it going to be enforced?
Right.
Well, you can't enforce any codes just on compliance, because that's not really constitutional. So you have to enforce complaints, and I'm sure that Scott does. But then you also have to get a little bit proactive and just take a ride around our neighborhood once in a while. You know, like, we've got a ton of ordinances in town, so if I get a complaint, for example, that, oh, you know, the fascia board rotted on this house on the corner of Washington 5th. Sometimes they're anonymous, they don't even name, and so I go there, I take a look at you up, and then I walk, you know, a couple houses each way, and I find something on a couple more, just because I'm already there. So I'm not just picking on that person. And usually you get the complaint in that scenario. They call it, hey, I got a letter from you saying I got to fix this. So, yeah. Well, no, I called about my neighbor. Well, I know you did, but I went to your neighbor. He's going to fix this too. If you want to fix yours, right? You just get ahead of the curve.
So, sort of like saying that, what's the difference between being discretionary and arbitrary in trying to, because you have flexibility in enforcement, but, you know, I think this would be right for, it's good, it's really good, but I think it would be right for somebody to claim, hey, this is being arbitrarily, I'm being picked on, it's arbitrary.
Arbitrary.
You say it's discretionary. How do you?
Because you do it the same way every time. That the only protection we have is code enforcement or building inspectors or anything. So if I'm going to go and hammer this person because of a 4-inch tear in their screen, then I got to find everyone. So I'm not doing it. But, you know, hey, you pick it on me. No, I'm not. You have to fix. You've got two broken windows on your second floor. You need to fix it. Well, why are you picking on me? Well, I'm not picking on you. I'm here because you have two broken windows. That has nothing to do with you. It's the two broken windows are broken. And your neighbor over there had to do it, the guy on the other side of town had to do it, and anybody else that I see with broken windows has to do it. Now we're not being honest. And we can use some discretion, but that's the one thing you have to guard against, is being a judge that you're arbitrary and capricious, because then if you go to court, they just throw it out anyway. So that you've written policy. That's another way to cover your back, right?
I'll follow up on that. But
so are you the enforcement officer in Alpena? You're the only one? Is that
no,
your...
No, I'm not sure.
So
I have other inspectors. I have an assistant building official.
So would our planning department do what you're doing?
Yeah.
Here?
I mean, that, unless you want to make another department. If there's, for properties, there's the people that typically will do it. We do rental inspections, too. You got out of our hands doing that.
Uh-huh.
But, the DPW will look at some stuff like yards, you know, because they're driving home, they see that stuff, so, you know, they have authority, not that they would, believe me, they'd rather call me and have me do it, but, I mean, they could do it for my department. So what I do is grass is a big one. So when I'll paint the grass, it'd be a top period, residential neighborhood. When you gotta cut it once at the beginning of the month or other times if necessary, never gets over 8 inches. So I have a summer student that I hire, you know, you gotta get somebody that you can trust too. And we send her over him out to take care of that for us, so we don't have to. And then while they're all doing that, they're looking for that broken window or, you know, the hole in somebody's roof. Take a ride down an alley and drive, collapse in the back, and they help get us ahead of the curve. And even with that, I've got, you know, I could have as many as 7 people helping me, can't do it all. It's impossible.
So those, oh, sorry.
Well, I'm just gonna say, and nor is the council or the taxpayers willing to pay for 100%, you know, type enforcement, but they definitely want to make the best. And this book is a good tool. It's not a Bible. I don't know what edition you guys are looking at right now, because it comes out every 3 years. It's on the same cycle of building code. But the city has had property maintenance codes adopted separately from, you know, just in their own jurisdiction since the 1970s. So back then we used the Volcker code. This is the copulation of Volcker, SBC, all three code cycles came together to create this book. There's training available through the Michigan Housing Association. They have meetings in Midland. You can go there and become certified in this book if you want to, through the ICC. And they teach you all the legalities of it, how to keep yourself out of trouble. So I've been doing it in the city for 20 years. We haven't been sued once. I can write misdemeanor and civil infraction tickets myself like a police officer. I don't like to. I wrote 12 in 20 years. My assistant building official wrote about 500. Never lost a book. It's all about training and how you conduct yourself. And part of the thing makes it easy for me, like it would be easy for Scott, a very small department. So it's not like being in the city of Detroit where you've got hundreds of inspectors running around. You're trying to make sure everybody's being the same. It's real easy for us just to have a guideline. You know, here's, we get a complaint, here's what we do. We see this, here's what we do. Pretty soon you've got it. Even when Scott's no longer run, you've got a book that here's how we can do it. And all those things will keep you from being judged and being arbitrary and capricious, because you can prove you have it. But if you do it in the future, adopt this, because, you know, a lot of times municipalities will adopt a particular year of the International Property Maintenance Code. So I don't know, the newest one out, the 2018 is out right now. The 2021 is going to be coming out in a few months. But the one that the state of Michigan is on, through informal adoption through the building codes, is the 2015. So what I do is when I adopt a code, we're adopting building codes too, of course, is I adopt the most current Michigan building, Michigan residential code, and when we do our property maintenance code, we stay on the current one with the state through the building codes. We're not getting off circle.
Are you going to say something, Sal?
Well, I was just wondering how many of the people who are picked on or feel that they're picked on.
Picked on. I get that.
End up being the scouts to go find somebody else that you can pick on. You ever have that happen?
Well, we have. I'll tell you, we've had. Well, yeah. When I'm telling somebody they got to do something, then they come up.
Oh, no way.
It's like they're the whistleblower, right?
Yeah.
What I always tell them is, I said, "That's fine. Why don't you give me a call tomorrow, and I'll be happy to deal with those. But right now, we're dealing with yours." That you just have to be consistent like that. And then there's times when you get where people complain about the exterior of somebody's house needs paint. Well, painting, you all know, is not cheap anymore. So, you know, we've got a lot of widow ladies with big houses that need paint. And so, you know, when you got these books, you're always on this timeline. We've got houses that have been being painted for 3 or 4 years. Because if there is just, unless the city wanted to pay to have the house painted, they just can't afford it. They can do a little bit at a time. They've got some family to come up and help. So again, we document that. So, because we're still going to get the complaints. But then, you know, if Scott or I don't respond to complaints, then you guys get the call and gals, right? Hey, I called Scott, he won't do anything. We have to have documentation to satisfy you, and we hope that it satisfies the public that we're working towards getting this taken care of. And That's all I can.
I just wanted to add one thing, since I wasn't here from when this first started. Is that code the same no matter what size the city is? I mean, there's
yes.
no differences, it's all, okay.
It's international code.
Yeah.
One of the issues, I think, when we considered this earlier, it seems like we had considered this twice before, not all of our neighboring communities had adopted this code, and I think pretty much everybody around us has at this point. East Jordan has a version of it, Charleroi has a version of it, Petoskey has a version of it, and there's always these concerns that come up with regards to it, you know, the little old lady's going to get picked on, or it's going to be arbitrary, and they're just going to come after me for a rip in my screen type of thing. It's the same discussion when people are afraid of a change that I hear on many occasions, whether it's a new sidewalk going into our subdivision or our neighborhood or something like that. Everybody imagines the worst possible scenario, and then the worst possible scenario rarely, if ever, occurs. I mean, you know what type of reputation, as Scott mentioned before, but we're good with working with people. We try and be reasonable. We have all sorts of ordinances on our books that we use as tools. We're not out to take the code book and enforce everything at every moment. This would be a completely different community. There'd probably be a riot in the meantime with regards to it. But it's a tool, and we try and be, whenever we enforce something, we try and be consistent with regards to it, whether it's by complaint or things of that nature. So I think having the experience of our neighboring communities that have gone down this path before us and haven't had significant problems should give you some comfort. I think just what you know to experience from this organization should give you some comfort. There's no guarantee that things might not change in the future, but ultimately the city commission has the control on that. If things start going awry, you can pass a moratorium with regards to enforcement of the whole ordinance or sections thereof, and or you can repeal it or change it. So you still stay in control. But the issue that keeps coming up is, and this is maybe at least the third time it's come up, is we have properties that are deteriorating throughout the community. And until it gets to the point, like the one on Thompson or the one at the intersection of Lincoln and South Park, I mean, we can all see it happening. Or the house over across from Barnes Lumber. Until, or on East Main, I mean, I can go through a whole list of them. There isn't anything we can do about it. And usually then nothing gets done. And that's more housing stock that we've lost in the community as well, too. But I think this is a real helpful tool to help us solve part of our housing issue and to try and take a valuable resource, our building stock in town, whether it's residential or commercial, and preserve it and protect it the best way we can, and work with people wherever we can. So I fully support it. I hope the commission will give it serious consideration. Obviously, you took time to schedule this, and that we can give it a try. And if for some reason it doesn't work, again, you always have the ultimate power to revoke it.
Yeah. You know, I agree with you completely. I think that, sure, other communities have it, they put it out there and so on. I think it's important for us to craft a version of this that matches the issues that we see within our city and anticipate, and with match that to our capacity to be able to enforce. I get a little nervous about ordinances that are quite broad in scope, with the promise of being as a tool. Because I think there's a risk, not now, but could be in the future, of that being misused. So the degree that we can really balance that in a way that fits Boynton City, I think, would be good out of the gate, rather than just adopting the whole thing and saying, you know, it's hope for the best. kind of along that note, I was wondering if other, we started a sort of a discussion about, the arbitrary versus discretionary. Do other communities sort of, well, let me give an example. You know, when you get pulled over for speeding, if you're going like less than 5 miles an hour or less, that a police officer has some discretion, you know, you can get a ticket or not, and so on. And I imagine that those sorts of policies are things that are sort of the way we do business, and that we have a certain If you go 10 miles an hour over, you're always going to get a ticket. And there's consistency among all the officers, I would presume. I wonder if there's something like that is true here in other communities where, in addition to the code itself, there are some policy guidelines that are written and reviewed every now and again that give some guidance to those who are enforcing about how to how to manage that ability to be discretionary.
It, well, that's a good point. And so we all use the city of Alpena for example. So I'm a builder. So Scott's not, and not going to be, and the person enforcing the codes aren't going to be built, you know, registered with the state in that capacity. So because I'm a building official, it's my job to write those policies. Every building official in the state of Michigan is supposed to write policies for their building department. Now, a lot of building departments like mine are tasked with property maintenance because I work for a city or community. County building departments absolutely don't do it unless they're hired privately on the site. So they already have, so where do I get my lead? So we changed, I've been through four different city managers in my time at the city of Alpena over 20 years. And the first thing I do every time we get a new one, we're, this is a strong manager, we council, former government here in Boyne City, too, that all kind of set up.
It's very similar.
Yeah. So every time we get a new manager, I sit down. We just got Rachel Smolensky from Harvard Springs that became our manager. So I sit down and say, here's how I do business. You got this box. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? For example, so we have not only zoning ordinances, property maintenance ordinances, we have a code of ordinance too, narcotic ordinance. So in there you have to shovel your site, keep it free of ice and snow. So the city used to go around with a plow, we can't afford to do it, they quit doing it years ago. So the violation for that is a ticket. So you either shovel your sidewalk, I don't care if 20 below zero for 3 days in a row, and it never quits snowing. But your neighbor complains, they don't like you, so you gotta not want you to enforce the ordinance, I just tell them, no. I give them 48 hours after it stops snowing. Then we go, if they haven't done it, we tag them, they get two more days. Then if they hadn't done it, I send somebody over to do it, they get the bill, I never have to ask them to do it again. They're glad to do it, because it costs $120. Never wrote anybody a ticket, even though that's the penalty, because that's my policy. And so every time there's new managers, new council people, and they have questions about that, I go over with them. Because you well know, as council and the mayor, and one of your employees here at City Hall doesn't do what a constituent wants. They're calling you. They expect you to do something about it. So we try to get everybody on the same page as soon as possible and have that on. You know?
Okay, I think of an example here, you know, for instance, we have a limited force capacity. We don't have nearly what you have in Alpena, of course. We've got Scott and Patrick. And then there's Scott and then there's Patrick, right? And so I wonder, you know, that along that line, if the policy documents were reviewed administratively, says, you know, we're going to concentrate, for instance, on external. We're not going to, the external appearance.
Oh, yeah, you would never want to say that.
Right. And then, you know, focus on, and our emphasis is going to be on those properties that we think are at risk of crossing the line. So that we're really kind of focusing so that Scott and Patrick know when they're out about driving around town, they're not in trouble looking for torn screen and shingles. They're looking, you know, really trying to focus on, you know, in their professional judgments, are those properties that might cross that boundary to something that requires a more drastic solution.
Yeah.
Would that be an example of a policy approach that would be a reasonable thing to accompany, I mean, administratively, but accompany that would provide guidance to utilizing this?
Yeah, I don't know how, because you're not really voting on it. Well, you could make a council policy if you have those. So you could do a council policy, I suppose.
Well, it could be administrative as well, you know,
yeah.
As long as...
Well, all our council policies are administrative, but that's, we got a whole book of them, you
sure.
know, 100 of them. Here's what you do, here's how it goes, you know. Like, an example is on a property enforcement. When I first started there, there was nobody to mentor me, and it didn't matter because I would change it all anyway. But I asked the tax assessor, Ben, and I said, all I saw were these letters that were getting written to people. You know, paint the house, fix your roof, put a handrail on your stairs. And then I've seen all the, they didn't do it, so they wrote more letters, and, you know, I'm looking at hundreds of letters in the summer. And so I asked the tax assessor, I said, is there anything that could I just, like, go knock on the door and have a conversation with that homeowner and say, hey, by the way, you need to take care of this. He'd been there 20 years, he didn't know. That's what I learned about council policies. And there was a statement, personal contact, that's the first thing you do before you send the letter. So I switched, and so what I've got is a whole bunch of green door hangers that look like your, the orange power shut-off notices you see on people's houses, that have a bunch of boxes. And I check a box, and I write a brief explanation, and I say, please call me, and I hang on the door. That's my, that's our first contact if nobody's home. But you don't wanna box yourself in too much. I mean, I know Scott pretty well over the last 5 or 6 years of doing this with him, and seeing what cases he brings that I come and sit as a hearing officer on. So this is the one, I just can't see Scott going on because somebody's got a screen flap on the breeze worrying too much about it. But when you've got one little hole in the soffit or the fascia, you know, maybe in the corner where there was a lot of ice in the valley where that's the first place that rots out, that's what this is for. Because while you're dangerous building ordinance, you're not going to go through the expense of a hearing to have somebody get a piece of 1x6, 12 inches long, nail it up there and paint it. This here, you can't, because you just worry about the exterior of the structure. And it puts some teeth in it. Because if you don't have some type of an ordinance that tells John P. Public, hey, we can tell you to do this, you know, that's what we do, then you don't have any, and you're just in a big argument. But it's really all down to, I wouldn't even worry about interior structure. Leave that to the building part. Because if there's a problem with the interior of the structure, no heat, no water, no electrical, you should be able to call the building department and they should take care of it. I mean, I have social service agencies call me all the time. There's no heat. They're leaving their stove on. I go over and I deal with it as a building official. Charlotte County is no different. They may not want to, but they really should. And that's, you know, something for elected officials to get together with the county commissioners and ask them why is it they don't do that, if they in fact don't. And as far as the exterior structure, that's what we use it for the most. You know, your exterior free of rubbish, garbage, junk vehicles, grass cut. I mean, not house painted where to the point where, you know, there's a 10 by 10 area needs a little bit of paint. No, for the more serious thing, the whole house needs to be painted. Or, you know, you've got the hole, like the previous example, a hole in the roof or a hole in the soft fascia, for those things, just to get them on board. And then once you've notified them, what I would do is I say, you know, instead of saying, well, you've got 10 days to fix this, I always ask them, I say, well, how long do you think it's going to take you to take care of it? And a lot of times they're scared. They're saying, I can do it 5 days. Okay, well, can you do it in 15? Because that's how much time I can do. But I said, in 15 days, I don't want to be going back over unless it's done. So if something happens in 10, give me a call. And you just work with people like that. And, you know, there's always a fear of the unknown, like you were starting to say, Mike. But it's not, once they see what you're doing, they won't be afraid of it anymore.
You say that you do rental inspections?
Yes.
So how do you deal with a rental if someone is renting it and the house is in not very good shape?
It won't be a rental.
Pardon me?
It won't be a rental.
So what when you do a rental inspection, what exactly does that mean? What do you do?
Like basic life safety. You know, if it's a 3-prong outlet, it's grounded. If it's near water, it's a GFI. If there's a stairway, there's a handrail. If it's 30 inches tall, there's a guardrail. Not a bunch of holes, there's no water in the intrusion, there's no leaky plumbing. The water heater works, the furnace works, the air conditioning, that works. We do them on a 3-year basis. Because I've got almost 1,700 rental units. And so we do them every 3 years, so that's about 1,100 inspections for in and back up. They pay $90, we go in, we inspect it. Smoke alarms, dangerous things, 24 hours to fix it. A hole in the wall, little drip on the pipe, 30 days. And then we come back and make sure that they did. Once they do it, we give them a certificate that they can run. If they don't do it, we shut them down. And it's a pain. We have to take them to court. Haven't had that happen where we had to shut them down. They fix it.
So what capacity are you doing that? Is a building, Alpena building inspector or a county building inspector?
City. Only the city. The county doesn't do it. I've been to a lot of the communities helping them get set up for rental inspections. And so we do it. As a city employee, and to be honest with you, it's not really a moneymaker. It pays for about 65% of the cost of the program. 35% winds up being subsidized by the general fund. And totally, you're looking at about $150,000 a year. But the people, the residents, the taxpayers are happy to pay for it. Because now, you know, that's a lot of your problems. It's going to be the rental, the slumlord, the absentee landlord, whatever you want to call them. But that's what happened. Now the neighborhood starts getting improved. Because, you know, the house needs to be painted. We don't make them do it in 30 days, but we get them on a plan. You know, get it half painted this year, the rest of it by next year. So we just lay the ground. This is really no different than the property. It's all property maintenance. It's just, is it a private homeowner? Or is it a tenant landlord situation?
How do you handle restoration, home restoration projects, you know, outside restoration projects that go on for year after year after year and, you know, don't get done?
Like, well, it depends. So they have to get built. Siding, windows, doors, living stairs, all the building permits for everything. I'll let a restoration project go on for about 2 years. On the same, even though permits expire after 6 months or a year, depending on what's going on, I'll let it go for a year, as long as they're making progress. Because some people take them that long to get it done, you know. If somebody's taking that long to get it done, I mean, they could get it done, but they just choose not to, that's a different story. So it depends. Every case is a little bit different. But what we do is, so after 3 months goes by on something, just for an example, should have took a month, we're knocking on the door and having a conversation. I only got 10 square miles. So I'm like, what's going on? Well, my wife's got cancer and I can't. I get it. Hope everything works out. Well, you know, we get kind of lazy. Okay, well, you're going to have to get on lazy because your permit's going to expire. You're going to give me another $300. You know, there are tools to motivate. But I've been doing this for a long time, so I've made all the mistakes a long time.
I got a question.
No, you go first.
So, do you know how many homes we have in our city limits?
I don't know, 1,400 or so?
1,400. 90% of them are okay, so you're talking.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm trying to figure out your case a little bit, and we all know them.
Yeah, and one of the things that Mike brought up about all the houses that we had to take action on, well, all those have been action. And this would give us an opportunity to inject ourselves into those because you don't have a person there that's taking care of those broken windows or siding or whatever. It's kind of slowly deteriorates over time. So being able to address those, I think, is critical. So, you know, I think this ordinance would prevent a lot of this effort that I expended on this hearing we just had. So, you know, it would be a wash, or even probably a time frame, because you don't have to bring a hearing officer, do a 37-page report, have a city commission meeting to hear this, go to court to appeal it, and all those other things. You know, you have the civil infraction be able to, you know, if it comes to that, to address a small issue.
True, but there would be a timeline to catch up. Because the 15 homes that are dilapidated right now would take some effort. And nobody's grandfathered, right?
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Don, you brought up the situation in your review of couple minutes ago with regard to going to a house and they're using the stove for heat, either because they can't afford, the natural gas has been shut off, or their furnace is broken. And usually that speaks to some type of financial hardship and things of that. Where does that factor in? Because I know a lot of people have concerns that, well, geez, somebody's down on their luck and things are tight and we're going to be chasing them out of their homes. Well, so how do you balance that?
It depends on what it is. Like if they're using the stove for heat, I'm looking at you know, little kids running around. It's a bad day for them. I know all the social service agencies, True North, Wolford, Fly Gas, Light Firewood, whatever you need for your heaters. Alpena County has a county home improvement program. Social services, even the health department sometimes can help with emergency things. But the thing is, as a government official, once I see that, if it's a hazard and all that, using your stove for heat definitely is, I can't allow that to continue. So I'll do everything get them on the right path to get it corrected. But I can't say, well, okay, well, gee, you know, I hope in 2 weeks you can afford to get some gas, because what do you think if that place burns down 2 days later? And if it's, well, you know, John Jones, well, there you go, that, I can't let that happen. Not only for my own personal liability, but for the liability of the city. So if it's just something, something needs some paint or a crack in the window, well, we can work with that as a financial hardship. But if you do that, again, you know, those would be what I would call administrative departures. So if you're going to do that, to keep from being seen as arbitrary and capricious, you need to document that, you know, why you did it. And have it. I mean, I can do that in zoning and all other kinds of things too, because I'm not going to live forever. So when I get replaced and, you know, well, gee, Don never did that, Don never did that, Don, well, here's what Don did. Here's the guidelines of the book. So. And yeah, it's, you know, even if you adopted this in the next 10 minutes, it's going to take a while to set it up. Yeah, you know, you might not want to adopt the whole book. There's things here that aren't real good because they conflict with the building code. Like, if you've got a copy, section 307, handrails and guardrails. And that's probably the same in the 18, this is the 15. But so for an example, what it says is a flight of stairs is going to have more than four riders, have to have a handrail on one side of the stair. Every open stair, blah, 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 more than 30 inches, shall have guards. So the handrail that you grab with your hand, the guard, and the spindles that are horizontal or vertical if the space less than 4 inches. So this says it's got to be 30 inches tall. So if you go and tell somebody, hey, you need to put a handrail on your four stairs there, 30 inches tall, and they put it on 30 inches tall, and then the building inspector comes by and they say, that's got to be 34 inches tall. So, you know, there's things like that you need to get out of here, don't enforce, because they're conflicting with our state building code that Charlotte County has been for. Your appeals, like all government, an aggrieved citizen has to have a way of appeals. So you have to have a board of appeals. So you can use the zoning board. I have a building department. We have a building board of appeals, a rental inspection board of appeals, a housing board of, you know, we got all this. It's all the same people. They've met one time in 20 years. That's if somebody complains about something based on this book, they have to have some type of an appeals process in place.
Would there be a reason to adopt just the outdoor portions of the exterior portions of the code without the interior?
You can. That, you know, you can pick exactly what sections you want to adopt or not adopt. You know, I adopted it entirely. I adopted except boom, 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 and take up what you don't like.
Scott, do you think rental inspections are important for our town here?
I don't get a lot of complaints about rentals. I can get them all the time.
Do the complaints come from the tenants?
Every once in a while, yeah. I mean, if there's a complaint, it's usually from the tenant. I mean, but it probably would be have some value, but I mean, do we have the capacity to enforce that? I'm not sure.
That's a big part of the effort.
Yeah, right.
That's not, I mean, the city, until I got there in 2000, they had been talking about it for like 4 years. And they kept getting scared off because so many building officials and city mayors and city council got to be called over, like Port Huron, down in St. Joe. It's all how it's structured. And it's very time consuming. It's hard if you got to, you know, it takes years to set that up because you have to find out how many rentals do we have. Because you don't even know. So it's all got to be voluntary. You got to trust them to come in. And then through code enforcement, like we do in town, we find them all the time that don't have, that aren't registered. Because sometimes it's an honest mistake. It's a single family home. People don't know, hey, I'm only here in the summer. I'm going to rent out in winter. They don't know you have an ordinance. You know, they don't bother to read them. And it's not easy to pop up on your phone and then see it. But that's a big, I can tell you, just from my driving around here and home, you know, I can kind of tell, you know, sometimes around here, that's going to be an interesting meeting whenever you get here for that. the room will have a lot of people.
One good thing, Hugh, I think the majority of our rentals are probably regulated by government inspections because they are...
Through the Housing Commission?
Housing Commission.
And stuff.
And Bob Brooks, his book... complexes to meet standards.
Yeah, HUD and USDA, that Section 8 rentals, a lot of your people on rent assistance, they actually will have, it's called an HQS inspector going on Section 8 monies. So you get, I would say ours are probably 20% of them, but LPN's got a lot more single family, old lumber houses that were turned into triplexes and stuff back in the day. We're probably 20% that we don't have to do if we don't want to, the big apartment complexes. They have us do it. They pay, I mean, it costs a lot of money, they pay us to do it. But those inspectors miss too much stuff. They're not, we're nitpicking, I mean, they just, they're not building inspectors, they don't see what we see, I guess. But that, I mean, rental inspectors, that's, I went around the state of Michigan, here even the townships and some of the cities, just like when they're testing the waters. And it's not unusual to have 30 or 40 people sitting in the audience wanting to tear my head. Because I wear a Scalpina shirt on that day. The mayor will say, how can you take that if you don't even know? It's what I represent. And it's, but I said, if that's tough for you, don't have rental inspection. Because when you try to pass the ordinance, it's going to be 10 times. Because they're going to tell all the friends. You know, that older, rental inspections really boils the pot.
What about commercial buildings? Do you do any commercial, like a downtown building that sat vacant for 12 or 15 years and dirt in a window and that kind of thing?
We, I started a program through MISHDA with the upper units being developed in Alpena. We probably got 35 down there now, rental units, above stores. Now it's kind of different because MEDC put over MISHDA, kind of like in the background. Now it's more of a total project, but the left, one we're doing one right now, an old bar that closed down, and it's 1.2 million, and it's going to be a restaurant bar on the bottom, and 5 new rental units on the second floor.
Well, like a property though, they get caught in, you know, family squabble and inheritance, and it sits there for a long period of time.
Property, same thing. It doesn't matter. It's not just a residential. This is a property. Okay. Period. Real structure. They all comply. Some of them. You know, there's some old factory buildings and things where to try to make them comply with the exterior and this, I'd be executed by it. Because you're, you know, waiting to tear that down, put a flood of paper on it. And you just bite off a piece at a time. You try to keep making progress. You know.
I'm still stuck with that, the little lady whose shingles, because she was on the first floor not using the second. In the situations where you have somebody that has a situation like that, and they literally can't afford to do anything about
right.
it. Are there means for them to go to be able to help with getting something like that done, or are they?
Well, that, you know, I mean, I can only speak, of course, to Alpena County.
Yeah.
But there's 50 churches that do that. We've got Habitat for Humanity in Northeast Michigan there. We do programs of Brush with Kindness, and there's Salvation Army. There's a lot of people that help, especially with something small like that. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll come over sometimes and build a ramp for someone, you know, temporarily, that the older person that, you know, that needs to have a ramp up just so they can get in their house to get their physical therapy done at home, and maybe it's only there for a month. But I can't speak to this side of the state that well.
And really, Sally, you're protecting that person's asset, you know, by fixing it, letting them know they've got a problem. Because it's just going to deteriorate if you don't
right,
deal with
right.
it.
Right, right. I understand that. I just also understand if they're in a situation where they literally can't afford to
well, then county
do it. Then there's got to be places that you can steer them to, or
does Charlevoix County have a county home improvement program? Like Alpena County does.
It's pretty.
That's through Michigan.
It's pretty limited if it has one at all. It's very poorly funded, I guess I would say, for the whole county. There is a board, though. I think a couple of local real estate people are on that board.
So they do emergency things. Some are my favorites, because they're quick. You know, you can get like up to $15,000. I contract with the county to help them write the specs for that. But we go and we can put in a roof because the roof's leaking. We can replace the furnace. And we'll get it done in a week. I mean, you know, as quick as possible. Just put in these emergency things, the bad electric service, water heater, they'll close type. Then they do full-blown rehab, you know, $40,000-$50,000. Those are a little more expensive. There's not as much funding for that.
An example, Sally, would there's a home that I've had calls on over the years that looks terrible, and shabby, ugly, but there's a family living there. You know, it's hard to, and I don't know if they're the owners or the renters, and I'm assuming they don't have the means to fix it up, but, and the neighbors are complaining. But it's occupied by a family. They want a boot.
Well, that would be a real case we'd have to deal with, though. I mean,
it would have to be, yes.
Property maintenance standard. As Don was saying, maybe it's not safe for the kids inside the house, and, you know, all sorts of
sure. things. Sure, absolutely.
But the easiest way to find out is that a legitimate way to get in there. It's kind of like if I'm riding around and I see somebody, you know, I see one of your boards coming out of the second floor window, a dumpster in the driveway with a lath of plastic sticking out of it like that, and I knock on the door and I say, hey, what do you got going on? Nothing. Because, you know, it kind of looks to me like maybe you need a building permit. I don't. Let me tell you this story. I already know that lath and plastic came off an exterior wall, so now you need a permit. And I said, well, my brother is an inspector, like, and he told me I didn't need one. I said, that's why I'm not really concerned about it, other than the fact you do need one. There's two ways we can do it. You can come in and get a building permit so that I can come and do an inspection at the appropriate time. Why don't you just let me in? And, you know, you don't have to. Why don't you let me in and walk for your truck? I'll tell you if you need it. Then I'm in. Then once I'm in, I can physically take care of it. And that very same scenario happened to me with a lady that was, I felt so bad. The whole family that had medical issues. The husband was 80, was in a wheelchair. Grandkids that were just knucklehead, junk all over the house. The neighbor was probably 25 years old, well-to-do, but he did not like her, and all he did is complain, complain, complain. And so I went and I did the complaints, but I wasn't working on it very hard. Until finally, because he just kept complaining, wouldn't go over like I would, it would help your neighbor, God forbid. But finally I went over and I left her a note, I just wrote her a hand note, and I said, look, within 2 weeks, this house outside, this has got to be, we got to do something. And so she dropped off to me a handwritten note, I could barely read it, 3 pages long. I was in my office waiting for a council meeting to start. And the councilman, who was best buddies with that guy in the corner, came down and he started ripping me a new one. I'm like, wow, you know, wanting to know what I was doing about that house. And so I said, I'll tell you what, why don't you read this, and I'll do whatever you tell me. So he got done reading that. Boy, you're doing fine, thank you. And eventually we got to take care of it. But that's the kind of, it's not easy. I mean, we're not robots. There's no book, you know, you can input this and here's your absolute answer comes out. So it's all about personnel and trusting them that they're not going to be picking on people they don't like with this new tool. But it's just what Scott said it was, it's a tool to get ahead of the curve and slow the erosion of houses to get to the point like the one we're at. And I just, on a side note, I wouldn't have any trouble myself trusting Scott. I know from our conversations he gives, because he doesn't go crazy with the dangerous building. Because, I mean, when I go and look at one, I drive past two more that I know fit all the criteria, but must not be as many people complaining. So he's picking it off at an affordable pace, you know. And same thing I just started doing with Jonathan over in Charlotte. You know, they got the same kind of issues.
Would there be a reason to incorporate a dangerous structures ordinance into an ordinance? I think Petoskey did. There's sort of dangerous structures thing is kind of, is that mixed in here or not?
If you combine things, sometimes it's harder to change them. So let's just, as an example, let's say we combine the property maintenance code with a dangerous building, then a year from now, we don't even want it, so we're just going to get rid of the ordinance. Then you're going to have to go back and redo your dangerous building ordinance. I mean, it's sometimes better to let things stand alone, you know. You could eliminate your dangerous building ordinance if you wanted to, and just go with the guidelines and the International Property Maintenance Code and follow both, you know, the same thing. I mean, if you get to the point where you're tearing somebody's house down, you're going to serve a court.
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
It's just the time. To me, this, because I don't do it that way in opinion. We don't have a dangerous, you know, know, I give you so much time, you give so much time, boom, here you go, Mr. Attorney, we want to vote. And then it gets tore up. This thing, it's a private thing about people, you know, they get six or seven letters from Scott, but they might think he's kidding or something, until they're standing in front of me. And I've had him say that before. It's like, well, I didn't realize how serious this was. And part of the issue with having that realization of how serious this doesn't happen very often. They don't read about it in the paper. He's not knocking on, you know, I'm looking across the street at a house that's half as bad as mine and nobody's doing anything to them. That's another reason that a maintenance code can help alleviate some of those issues. And it will. It takes time. And nothing happens overnight. But when we started doing that in the city, there used to be a MISHTA grant for rental rehab. It was $15,000 grant per unit with a $5,000 match. So the duplexes, the triplexes, now when I'm going, we're doing rental inspections, we were able to have them apply. We ran a program. We probably did maybe $7 or $8 million in through these houses. And so they got it for 25%. So we were able to fix it. And so that made it more palatable to them. Some people didn't want anything to do with it. But there's all these extra caveats that help there. And then as the state would come up and run us through inspections, so they had more industrialized section of Alpena, for lack of a better term. It was when we had all the factories right downtown when I was a kid, there was all these little worker houses, and then when everybody, you know, like we had one car growing up my whole life, now everybody, if you got six kids, you got six cars. But everybody got affluent, we created Alpena Township. They left the city because they didn't want to be underneath the Fletchers and Abitibi and the Smithland smokestack. So we got all these little houses that turned into the rentals and they deteriorated. Now that we were able to go in with grants and start fixing them up, over a 6-year period, the state of Michigan couldn't believe the transformation. And a lot of it was the grant money, but most of it was private investment once they saw the improvement just happened in the neighborhood. And the regular people that just lived there, that had nothing to do with the rental, were happy. Because somebody was taking a look at my neighbor, you know, not just the one that really super bad. So, and I know I ran a lot of lack of just these thoughts just spinning around in my head. But you know, I like I said, I've been doing this for a long, long time. And some things work and some things don't. But these things work good. If we were in Alpena Township right now, and that was the building official they just hired, and you were going to adopt the property maintenance firm, let him run it, I'd tell you don't do it. But he's not working one.
Got a question. Have we brought this to for the public hearing? It hasn't been brought up yet. Have we set a timeline for bringing it out here?
No, I think we're here tonight because we had tasked staff to explore this further. Is that true, Mike?
Correct. I know it's quite voluminous. You also made a comment. You may want to remove several items that are in there, and particularly what's inside the house or outside the house.
Well, you want it outside pure, right?
You want to keep it pure as far as the language and what you're gonna enforce.
Do you recommend, Scott, that we, and this is 28 pages, that we kind of go through here quickly and highlight or delete, or do you want to see this one?
No, I don't want to do that. No.
I think guidance, you know, like concentrate on the outside, you know, with that, we could probably model an ordinance that would meet those. Just a caveat, I talked with the city of Petoskey and how they enforce it. Their Department of Public Safety is able to enforce part of this ordinance. And when they go in to a building for whatever reason, they have the opportunity to see, oh, gee, your furnace don't work, or you got this, they can write a citation for that. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly done for safety reasons when they see those kinds of issues that they can be addressed. So that's just something to think about.
Do we want to go there?
I just tell you what the options are.
We know Petoskey has the Department of Public Safety as a part of mission, and we know we already, you know, put a lot on our officers. I'm just not sure we want to put that on.
Is there a reason why you don't?
Well, I mean, it's just extra time, and it requires training. I mean, we got to train them to that. We can't have just kind of taking the best guess. And it's just, you know, one more thing, then they got to... One more thing that they have to be trained to and they got to think about. It was just my first reaction was, I don't know if we want to try to put that on our officers. I don't know what the rest of you think.
I don't see if we have to train Scott's department or the police department. I mean, I don't see a difference.
Well, we would leave the inside to the county building tomorrow.
Exactly.
Well, how's our relationship with the county building department, Scott? Or is it good? Or?
A little better, but still not to the level that I would like it, and we need to work on it.
Should we do as Don suggested and have elected officials get together with the county commissioners, or are there steps we should take to help improve that? Or?
When I said that, I didn't mean like formally.
Oh.
I mean, you must know some of them. I'm just all giving them a call and having a conversation, because I can absolutely tell you, you know, Captain was there to start once Kenny died of cancer years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, I call him Kenny, younger than me. Captain Slickow, I know pretty well, and the building inspector, I know pretty well. They both served in the military with me, and I tease them all the time, every chance I get. Well, how come you guys don't do your job? Boy, City Charlotte, the way I got to come all the way over here, no pain, yada, yada, it'd be dangerous building. The reason a lot of times they don't do anything is because there's no money in that. And so, you know, the county, like every other government entity, they have things that they do. Well, their building permits and inspections, they're pretty busy, and they're making money, but they sold building permits for that. So for them to stop and just knock on somebody's door for no reason, only because they see a broken window, is, you know, they're pretty much, you don't need to do that. I think the county commissioners have told, the building official would be who they'd be addressing at that, and just, well, you know, that's, you're not going to do that. So I think that's why we're taking, you know, government official to have a conversation about what they'd be willing to do. They're definitely making more money now than they were a few years ago when the economy was on the downturn a little bit, when they were scaling back, getting rid of people, and the budget was terrible. They should be holding their own well now.
Dean, I think I'd like to. I see nothing wrong with the officers, you know, being. They're probably the best social workers we have in town.
But in this case, we'd have to train them to be able to, on the code, right? We'd have to train them on this code if they're going to be in there and they're going to point out what they think is a code violation. We have to know what a code violation is, right? Is that something you think that they'd be comfortable with?
I don't have a problem with it, but I also see maybe a collaboration. Between Scott and you pick one or two officers that get the training, but it's identifying, knowing. I don't think the training is exorbitant.
It would be not for me.
But are you out looking for it, or are you responding when you get involved in it?
Oh.
Well, the way Kazi does is they're not looking for it directly. It's more
I mean, that's how
they notice it as they're on scene and kind of, oh, by the way, this.
Or if somebody brings it to their attention.
Right, yeah. Like if there's someone makes a complaint about something specific.
When I say both, I was referring to the 15 homes that we know immediately need enforcement to protect the neighborhoods.
Personally, I would much rather our officers have that ability to do that and to deal with a life safety issue than they were in that building, they noticed it, they couldn't do anything about it.
So that would be build the case for keeping the indoor portion.
Correct.
But you know, I think it's fine. You know, I think we ought to move ahead. I would be most comfortable if we had however version of this minus the things you think ought to be removed opposed to us, along with a policy document that outlines here's our approach and priorities when it comes to implementation. And if it does involve or may involve our police department, that ought to be part of that policy document as well. I think if it's a separate thing, then we have more flexibility in changing as we need, wouldn't we? It wouldn't be quite so, like, it wouldn't be like adopting ordinance. This is the ordinance, but the policy document that goes with this is something that would be more flexible that we could choose to adopt as a commission, or we can just leave as a staff document, and then I want to look at it a while. I think that might be a good precedent for us to set, and that might help with that whole issue of continuity over time. When you retire, did you say it was like 30 years from now, the intent that then the next person would be able to follow up and have that as guidelines as well.
I still hear the word discretion in all
discretion, yeah, I know, even if it was in there that, you know, in the case of, like you're talking about the little old lady, that we don't mention little old ladies, of course, but we say, you know, part of our, first we're going to have a conversation. If we recognize that there are some real barriers to getting fixed, we would help that person, link them to services where they can get the work done, so on. And I think that would be something that would be a valuable document, and also useful if there residents to say, wow, you're going to come after me for the screen door? Well, here's how we're actually implementing this. And that would be a really good tool.
You know, you should take it the 1 mile over.
Right. And it's written. It's something, like, here's the document, here's how we go. It's like the ticket for 1 mile an hour over.
Yeah. That screen door really left an impression.
It sure did. And I got that thing fixed so quickly. You know,
I'm
all good now, but it's only 3 inches. So I think I'm within the guidelines.
I can't carry my big windows in towards the screen door very much. I'm in trouble.
So are you looking, Mike, for direction from us to pursue further?
Yeah, we're looking for guidance as to how you want us to pursue. Basically, what I hear at this point is, and correct me if I'm wrong, a consensus that the commission would like to go forward on this. They're directing staff to go back and look and see if there's any extraneous sections that we feel aren't necessary for this community at this point, and to prepare some type of an enforcement policy document to bring that back to the City Commission, either get some type of a memo we provide for you informally so you can react to it, and then assuming that we're kind of heading on the right direction, then we can bring it back formally to the City Commission requested to be introduced and set up for the public hearing to go on the normal adoption process. Is that close?
Ron, are you, what he just outlined, are you?
I'm good with that. I'm just, do we have some type of a time and date that we want to have it ready for a public hearing? I mean, have a goal? I mean,
Scott, would have a time frame based on what we heard today?
Two or three years we've been working on this, you know. Saying we've got to do it, but
I think we could get this done this summer. I mean, find some documents and keep our hands drawn.
Is that okay with you, Ron?
Fine.
I'm in favor of that. Dean?
Yeah.
So that's great. Okay. We have a goal and a timeline. Sally?
Yeah.
So just to clarify that a little bit further, are we saying on June 1st? Is that realistic, or let's pick a date? Summer seems a little vague.
How about July 1st?
Or July 30th or September. That's,
or we could use
we'll have it by end of August.
There we go.
End of August, you'll be ready for adoption, you mean?
Yeah.
Or adoption.
Hopefully there'll be a document in front of you for adoption by end of August.
That's the same deadline we gave the property owner. August.
Yes.
So that I didn't technically give it.
Yeah, you still got that.
That'll tie in with his revisit.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. End of August is it. Let's go for it.
That's fair enough.
Faster if possible.
Is that anything else you need from us, Mike?
No. You gave us direction. That's what we're looking for. Send us that.
Any further comments, Scott?
No.
No, I applaud you for it. It's a thing to affect Americans. Always tough. And I know from dealing with it all the time. I applaud you because you're moving, I think, in my opinion, you're moving in the right direction. You got a vision, and you know, this is just going to be another tool to get you to that. Because what I found is, you know, people are 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, people were a little more tolerant of each other. But I don't know, something in the water nowadays where somebody, they just get mad. Boy, when they have a bad day, they look for.
Not here in Boynton City, maybe Alpena, but
I think over all the meetings we've been at, discussion on the housing issue, I think there's wide support for this, community-wide.
And it's very helpful tonight. Worth our time.
When Alpena Township tried doing this, I think there's 9,000 people in that township. They actually managed to have 564 registered voters at their second hearing with petition because they bid off 2 months and it was all because of the uncertainty. But they were doing a property maintenance code. If you had a camper, you were going to pay $10 a year to park it in your yard. If you had vacant properties, which cost the city nothing. I mean, that's the best property you could have is a lot that's got trees on it. There's nobody's got to cut the grass, there's no sidewalk. They were going to charge $180 every 6 months to register the vacant property. And so they kind of created this mutiny that just blew up. I've been trying to help them get, you know, little pieces of it. There's things that need to be done in Long Lines property, man. You just can't blow it out.
Okay. Anything else? I guess at 6:40, motion to adjourn.
Do you have anything to go to 5 on the agenda?
We're going to go into executive session.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to adjourn and reopen this. I keep this up every week. I'll make a motion, request the city manager to go into closed session.
Second.
We have a second. Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunge?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.